From London, BBC Caribbean Report.
The Moonies controversy turning into Dominica's top election issue. Anguilla's outgoing governor describes his tour of duty there as a waste of time, and the Pandey Robinson impasse in part of Spain taken up in the Senate. I'm Ken Richards, and this is BBC Caribbean Report.
It's a case of a government throwing up a trial balloon to divert the attention of bad record and incompetence of his government.
Dominica's opposition leader, Rosie Douglas, responding to allegations made by Prime Minister Edison James. More from Mr. Douglas in a moment. Less than a week away from general elections, Prime Minister James has used an address to the nation to allege that there's a political-religious conspiracy against his governing United Workers Party. The Prime Minister is alleging that Mr. Douglas and his Dominica Labour Party have links with the Unification Church known as the Moonies, and that they may be funding the DLP election campaign. According to Prime Minister James, the Moonies are bent on subverting Christianity in Dominica, and he says both Rosie Douglas's DLP and the other opposition party on the island are involved in the alleged conspiracy.
In the context of the current ongoing accommodation between the Dominica Freedom Party and the Dominica Labour Party, it is reasonable to conclude that the Dominica Freedom Party is very much part of this whole conspiracy. We call on the religious, political, civic, and business leaders of our country to stand and be counted on the side of our Christian way of life. We call on all Dominicans to firmly reject the Moonies' bid for cult control of our island home.
Prime Minister Edison James, so has opposition leader Rosie Douglas been courting the Moonies as suggested by the Prime Minister? That's a question I put to the DLP leader.
They passed through Dominica, I think it was last year, and I spoke to them. People from other organizations, I spoke to them. We had no special talks or anything like that. I mean, I know them to be an international organization and most operating in most countries of the world, including the United States, where I know they own a major paper in Washington. But in terms of having any political discussion with them, they did tell me that the government or the police had planned to deport them from Dominica. But since then, I haven't seen them really.
So can you categorically state that the Moonies or any group of persons linked to them have not supported or isn't supporting your DLP campaign?
We had a debate, and in that debate I asked the Prime Minister that if he can prove that I got 1 cent, 1 black cent from the Moonies, I would resign.
But because somebody cannot prove something, for example, the opposition is alleging corruption charges against the government, because you can't prove something doesn't mean it may not be happening. So I am asking you, can you categorically deny?
Categorically.
What's your position on the Moonies?
I'm totally open to religious worship. Those who want to be Muslims can be Muslims. Those who want to be Hindus can be Hindus. Christians, Buddhists.
Is it your position that the Prime Minister overstepped his bounds by bringing up what appears to be a political campaign issue?
The Prime Minister abused his authority. He's only a caretaker Prime Minister. He has absolutely no right, no moral jurisdiction to go on the national radio station, to utilize a radio station owned and financed by the taxpayers to make those kind of unsubstantiated allegations.
But Mr. Douglas, he is still the Prime Minister. Can't he bring to the attention of the nation such matters if he deems it important enough?
Yeah, but
even
in
an election campaign?
You can't go and make wild accusations that you're a little baby then. You're a big man. You're Prime Minister. Make allegations that can't be substantiated.
He did cite police intelligence reports.
No nonsense. Bring it forward.
DLP's Rosie Douglas. So is there a real threat to Dominica's national security from the Moonies? Or was the Prime Minister's address a scaremongering, vote-catching exercise, as some of his opponents allege? I put those questions to Prime Minister James.
None of it is scaremongering. None of it is vote-catching. The facts are that our security forces have reported since 1998, about the presence of these people here, the representatives of the Mooney cult here, the activities that they were involved in. The security forces reported that they had meetings with Mr. Douglas. They discussed Mr. Douglas' plans if he were to win election. Mr. Douglas gave them information, including a list of his candidates. We are here at election time, and to the extent that Mr. Douglas discussed with them campaign funding to assist him to get in government, which would mean that once he got in government, he would have an obligation to them to bring them back to our country to carry out their practices.
But do you blame your opponents, given the timing of your address, for suggesting it's a desperate attempt to discredit the DLP and its leader because you see them as a threat to your retaining power?
It is important for the people to know what will happen if they were to put authority in the hands of a man who has an engagement with a dangerous cult.
But some have characterized your address, Prime Minister, as negative campaigning of the worst kind. Why isn't it so from your perspective?
Because it is a responsibility that I have to ensure as much as possible that this country does not fall in the hands of a person who is in a relationship with a cult that is anti everything that we stand for. I have that responsibility.
But is it proper to use an address in your capacity as Prime Minister to attack your electoral opponent?
It is very proper for me as Prime Minister and Minister for National Security and a Dominican, committed to Dominica, to warn the people of what they would be getting involved in if they were to put the authority in the hands of Mr. Douglas.
Prime Minister Edison James. In Anguilla, the departing Governor Robert Harris has fired a broadside against the government of Hubert Hughes. Governor Harris left the island today, describing his tough duty as a waste of his time. He said the Hughes government had been difficult to work with. Wycliffe Richardson was at the airport.
Mr. Harris, who served for 3 years and is now retiring from the diplomatic service, said he did not have a successful tour and had not found it possible to work closely with the government of Anguilla any more than his predecessors. I have achieved very little, and I would go as far as to say I personally regard it as a waste of my professional time, and I am quite disappointed about that, Mr. Harris said. Governor Harris said if Britain is to retain its constitutional relationship with Anguilla, it would require that it has a certain degree of power. Mr. Harris said it would be a waste of time, energy, and effort to expect the present British powers on Anguilla to be diminished. And if the continued retention is unacceptable, then the only choice for Anguillians is to seek independence. Governor Harris said the people of Anguilla had to make a choice, either to go independent or accept the very little light conditions that Britain imposes for its relationship with the country, to work together with the British rather than in conflict with them, noting that to do so would be foolish. Mr. Harris said the British government was willing to offer any help and assistance to Anguilla towards constitutional reform, adding that the problem the island has been in since May last year, when Finance Minister Victor Banks resigned from government, was because of the way the present constitution is framed and has not served the people well. And when that happens, it is time to change it. A large cross-section of the Anguillan community was at Wardbleak Airport to bid farewell to the governor and his wife, but absent were ministers of government. Peter Johnston, the new British governor, is expected in Anguilla in a week's time. From the Valley Anguilla, I'm Wycliffe Richardson for BBC Caribbean Report.
As the constitutional impasse continued between the President and Prime Minister of Trinidad and Tobago, the government was today blocked from adjourning a sitting of the Senate. Meanwhile, President A.N.R. Robinson stood his ground in not sacking two Tobago senators and reappointing two others in their place. Constitutionally, he has to act on the suggestion of the Prime Minister. Tony Fraser has the latest.
When the Senate was adjourned on Tuesday, the expectation was that President Robinson would have revoked the appointment of the two Tobago senators and appointed two others, so that the government would maintain its majority in the Senate today. But that did not happen. President Robinson postponed a meeting with Prime Minister Pandey to talk about the matter. Understanding that it would not have a majority, Leader of Government Business in the Senate, Wade Mark, asked the President of the Senate for an adjournment to today's sitting, outlining his reasons.
The fact that His Excellency has not as yet revoked the appointment of the two honorable senators and the government's unswerving commitment to uphold the Constitution and the law, it has no alternative but to move for the adjournment of this Senate in the hope that His Excellency the President, Arthur N.R. Robinson, will comply with the Constitution of our Republic Nation State of Trinidad and Tobago.
But with the two Tobago senators joining the opposition and independent senators in voting against the motion for adjournment, the government lost and had to continue with the sitting.
Honorable members, the question is that this House is now adjourned to Monday 31st January at 10:30 a.m. Those in favor say aye. Any against?
However, the government cannot be defeated on the finance bill, which is before the Senate, as the Senate cannot overrule the House of Representatives on financial matters. Tony Fraser in Port of Spain for BBC Caribbean Report.
The Cuban government has launched a bitter attack on what it says is the poor treatment of Elian Gonzalez's grandmothers in Miami. They've described it as inhumane and despotic. The two women met for 2 hours with Elian on Wednesday amid tight security at a neutral venue. Afterwards, he was whisked back to the house where he's staying with relatives in Miami. Cuba is also charging that Elian was prevented from speaking with his father when a cellular phone was seized from one grandmother. The reunion finally took place after it seemed that it wouldn't. I telephoned the spokesman for Elian's Florida relatives, Armando Gutierrez, and he began by hotly denying that the women's access to the boy had been restricted.
Yeah, I'm sorry, the Miami family have never tried to restrict the access. They've been invited to the house over and over again.
Do you not support the principle that children should be first with their parents and then with their closest blood relatives?
We have to understand that Elian's mother, lost her life bringing him to liberty. That was her last, dying wish, which she expressed to the other survivors on that boat.
But the impression seems to be growing that you're more concerned with your cause than with what's best for Elian.
Well, I don't know what your cause, what you're referring to my cause is. You know, the cause is the liberty that everybody tries to find in the United States of America. If you already have an opinion, I don't even know why you're wasting your time contacting us.
Opinion polls show that the American public are less and less supportive of the stand you're taking.
We live in a country of freedom, and we live in a country of laws, and we're still in a process of the court system. Every person has a right, and alien under the Cuban Adjustment Act has a right once he enters into the United States to an asylum hearing. That's really what the family is asking.
You've accused them of being Castro stooges, the grandmothers. Isn't it conceivable that they're acting genuinely with true feeling for their grandchild?
No, sir. One of the grandmothers' half-sister was in that room. They would not even allow her to see her sister. You talk about family unification, you talk about family, and they would not allow you to see your sister, and which is 10 feet away because the Cuban government would not allow it.
Armando Gutierrez. The Jamaican sprint star Merlin Otte may get to run in Germany after all. Organizers of a track meet there say they'll let her compete despite pressure from the world governing body, the IAAF, and from within Germany itself. The IAAF advised the meet organizers not to let Otte run on Saturday. She tested positive for the banned substance nandrolone last July and faces suspension by the IAAF. However, she's been cleared by Jamaica's track and field governing body and continues to insist that she's innocent. And back to the impasse in Port of Spain. We've just heard that President Arthur Robinson has asked the Prime Minister for an apology over the whole affair. Well, Tony Fraser joins us live from the Trinidadian capital. Tony, what can you tell us about this latest development?
Well, a letter received just half an hour or so ago from the President's office indicates that the President is asking not only the Prime Minister but the Attorney General Ramesh Maharaj to apologize for the statement made against his health. In his letter of earlier this week, the Prime Minister had said that the meetings between the two had stopped at the request of the President because the impact on his health. The meetings were having a negative impact on his health. And according to Prime Minister Robinson, President Robinson, that is very far from the truth, and it's also defamatory. And according to President Robinson, his doctors have passed him and they're very happy with his health.
But
he's asking both men to apologize to him.
But is Prime Minister Pandey likely to offer any such olive branch?
Well, that's a good question. I think it's up to the Prime Minister and the Attorney General to make a statement on the matter now. In his letter, incidentally, that's President Robinson's letter, there is no indication that he's about to revoke. No statement is made about revoking the senatorial appointments. So it is really going to be a sort of twist to the mind game now, which one will back down from this situation.
In fact, Mr. Pandey has said he doesn't anticipate Mr. Robinson not revoking the appointments of the two senators in question. Does that mean the issue is said to be a long, drawn-out affair?
Well, it could very well be that, because Mr. Robinson can claim, I think Sir Ellis told BBC yesterday, is that it's a matter of deferring and not refusing to. How long that can go on is anyone's guess, really.
And Tony, very quickly, what are the chances of it turning into a full-scale constitutional crisis and crippling the country's affairs?
Well, definitely, if it goes on for too long again, it will come to a situation where something will have to be done on the matter.
Tony Fraser in Port of Spain, thank you very much. Just before we go, a look at our top stories again. The Moonies controversy turning into Dominica's top elections issue. Anguilla's outgoing governor describes his tough duty there as a waste of time. And as you just heard, the Pandey-Robinson impasse in Port of Spain taken up in the Senate. Well, that's it for this edition of BBC Caribbean Report. I'm Ken Richards, saying goodbye from London.